So they're 14. I mean, I've not seen them for like 9 days. I do ward rounds, honestly. I don't know what you've heard.
You've taken up golf, and then between tees, you've decided
go to
come
work,
and do,
all right?
do a little bit of ward round.
It's the Tutti a scorpion, by the way, and in Central America.
All right, there you go. Or Camden.
So it's either symptoms, biochemistry, radiology, and you need to score 2 out of those 3 to call it pancreatitis, Atlantic criteria. Hello again. It's another episode of Scrubbing In. We're going to do something a bit more surgical this time, rather than critical care and the scary stuff. Okay, pancreatitis. Now, pancreatitis, irrespective of your subspecialty, is likely or certainly not unlikely to come up part of general surgery. For those of you that are upper GI or HPB, very likely, because it's very common. It's something that's quite serious. It's got multiple facets to it. So we're going to start off we're not going to get into the real nitty-gritty subspecialty stuff for the upper GI and HPB surgeons that we need to know. We will do that at a different date. Today we're going to talk about pancreatitis in the context of a general surgical station, so that would be relevant to everyone. Okay. Pancreatitis Mo, inflammation of the pancreas, very common worldwide, certainly in the UK it is. What are the different flavours or different subtypes of pancreatitis you can get broadly?
Moderate, severe, and then that's in terms of severity, you can categorise it, or you can categorise it in terms of pathology.
Yeah.
So inflammatory or necrotic pancreatitis, serous or necrotic.
Yeah. Underlying etiology, very commonly.
Gallstones followed by alcohol, autoimmune.
You say scorpion sting, that's good.
It's the Tutti a scorpion, by the way.
Some more.
Found in Central America.
All right. There you go. Or Camden.
Where was your clinic again, Matt? I've seen scorpions sting pancreatitis once in my life, actually, and I was in Australia. Do not start with that as an open line, and you certainly don't know. You don't need to know which subtype of scorpion species it is. Alcohol, gallstones, then there's some more rarer kind. There's things like viral infections, and that could be most common viruses, Coxsackie, EBV, I believe, and several other ones as well, particularly in those who are immunocompromised, so maybe transplant patients or those who are immunocompromised for other reasons. And then the other rarer causes are things like trauma, I can do it, hyperlipidemia, hypertriglyceridemia, particularly in the South Asian population. And it could be due to autoimmune and drug therapy as well. It's defined by biochemical markers. Now, whether that's lipase or amylase, lipase tends to be more sensitive, but an amylase 4 times the upper limit of normal is what's usually quoted, 3 to 4, although there's some controversy about that, because there are some things that can raise your amylase slightly, but it's not enough to call it pancreatitis. And also, of course, symptoms in keeping with what we think pancreatitis symptoms are.
Or radiology. So that's the modified Atlanta criteria of 2012. You diagnose pancreatitis getting 2 out of those 3 criteria.
Exactly. 2 out of those 3. So it's either symptoms, biochemistry, radiology, and you need to score 2 out of those 3 to call it pancreatitis, Atlanta criteria. Again, that's probably more upper GI than general surgery, but it's a good one to know.
Case, should we go into case?
Case, so let's go.
All right, you're on call. You're all down.
Certainly feels like it.
Let's see, even when you're not on call, you've been asked to give an opinion on a 45-year-old man who's come in day 3 after his stag do, and has come in with a...
Yeah, so 43 stag do, okay.
New beginnings, new chapters. Who are we to judge?
Yeah, third go at it.
Third go, absolutely. Day 3 of vomiting, abdominal pain. They already diagnosed pancreatitis with a lipase of 500. It's his second day in hospital, and it's his second day of pain. And you're seeing him at 8 o'clock in the morning. His heart rate is 120. His systolic is around 100. He's passed 15 mils of urine the last hour. He's in a cutout of pain. His saturation is 92% on 2 liters of oxygen. And you're reviewing the bloods. His CRP is 200.
Okay.
What means?
Yeah. So that's Moe's summarized a very nice kind of scenario there. That's, and they will give you a scenario like that because it gives you multiple avenues of questioning and multiple kind of issues that you need to consider well beyond just immediately surgical, what we consider surgical issues. So they may either give you that or somebody who's in the ED who's just arrived and is in physiological extremis. So again, as per the, you want to make a statement like this is a very serious situation. Pancreatitis is potentially very serious and life-threatening. One in four people with severe pancreatitis unfortunately die. So it's very serious. And you'd make a statement like, this patient is in physiological extremis. I'm very concerned about this patient. I'd go and see the patient. The specific question that Mo asked is, what are you concerned about? So what are we concerned about? Here we're concerned about a severe form of pancreatitis. Could be necrotic, may not be necrotic, but certainly it's not your mild pancreatitis person walking around the ward type of scenario. And it's also causing physiological derangement. Now, Mo has already given me at least one organ failure, possibly two, possibly three, actually. So you want to say that this is, I'm concerned about severe pancreatitis in the context of potential multi-organ failure. With this in mind, I would immediately go to see the patient and simultaneously assess and resuscitate, like we say in all these scenarios. So this patient's anuric, this patient's tachycardic. I don't think he was quite hypoxic.
Yeah, not quite
hypoxic. But certainly these are very worrying measures in somebody who's in their early 40s. Having taken a history, reviewed the notes, looking at what treatment has already been instigated or initiated, because they may not be under your care. You may be just doing the ward round on a Saturday or Sunday. And reviewing the notes and speaking with the staff who have been involved in the patient's care, I would speak with the patient, taking a focused history and examination. The salient points in the history will be what their background has been, when did the pain get worse, and how they've been feeling. And then you want to talk about what investigations they've already had, and you've given me some of them already. And then, as part of your overall assessment, you want to make a plan. For the patient management, you want to have an MDT approach, and you want a holistic overall higher level thinking. You want to control pain, so you want to get good analgesia, and that may mean reviewing the drug charts, or will mean reviewing the drug charts, and maybe even escalating with the help of the pain team or anesthetic team to even establish patient controlled analgesia, PCAs, because it can be very painful. Then you want to also talk a little bit about the fluid resuscitation, oxygenation, everything to correct the physiology. And then you also want to, within your MDT, talk about how you're going to escalate things further. Now, at this point, you may need some more additional information, as we talked about. There may be blood tests, blood gas, and a scan. Why a scan? Well, we don't routinely do CT scans on patients with pancreatitis, and there is some evidence, actually, in patients, if I'm not mistaken, patients who've got pancreatitis are quite sensitive to x-rays. So you don't want to do it routinely. But this patient has been in hospital for some time and things are clearly getting worse. So they may be dealing with something more than just straightforward pancreatitis. So a CT scan with IV contrast would be the right answer. Ideally, a pancreas protocol, and you want to have the venous face and the arterial face and so on. And that's when you'll say, you'll speak to your consultant radiologist to get the patient to intensive care, or HCU, or at least get their support from the outreach team, catheterize if they haven't already been, fluid resuscitate, and get your investigations. The other thing you obviously want to know is what type of pancreatitis is this? Is it gallstones? Is it alcohol? We said the patient was on a stag too, but don't assume that. You need to make, even in patients who, unless they've had a recent ultrasound within the last 6 to 12 months, you want to make sure that this isn't gallstone pancreatitis and you're labeling people as excessive alcohol and is actually stone somewhere.
Agreed. So part of the management of the immediate organ failure, supporting organ support, adjunct according to that to assess severity of organ injury, finding out the underlying pathology, etiology of gallstones, escalating to other members of the MDT. The fact that their CRP is more than 150 is probably the only sensitive marker that they need invasive monitoring, or a higher likelihood of needing invasive monitoring.
And it's worth remembering this point, sorry, just on that point, and you may sometimes get a referral from colleagues, lipase is 900, or however high
the biomarkers are.
It's not an indication of severity. CRP is a much better indication, although not perfect. We accept.
Do you believe in any of the pancreatitis severity scoring?
Pancreatitis severity scoring. Traditionally, we have used them in different trusts and different units, and some others still do. And you can mention them, say, look, in my trust, we use this scoring, Apache or whatever you want, the Glasgow, Emory, whatever you want to use, you can. I would probably just name drop in if you do use it. If you don't, just say, I'm aware that traditionally different scoring systems have been used. However, it's debatable as to how well it correlates. And once you've done your scoring, or say you just use their physiological parameters and you've got the patient ICU or HTU, and they will then give you a kind of feedback as to how your treatment has, what has changed or not changed. And it'll be one of kind of two things. Well, the patients are gradually getting better, and then you're going down the route of kind of making sure that you've got the MDT approach again, nutrition, dietitians, you may need feeding tubes, but it may get worse and the patient goes to ITU, is intubated and gets all sorts of complications and peripancreatic fluid collections and so on afterwards.
I like that you brought out nutrition. What's the guidance say on nutrition?
So nutrition, ideally you want, with anybody, you want enteral route, always the best. And that could be either NG or NJ, depending on, NG may not entirely be possible, or just oral. Yeah, this is presuming they're awake, but just oral. And irrespective of what route it is, you're going to say you're going to need a dietitian assessment, you're going to need a nutritional assessment, you're going to work in the MDT. Absolutely must say. Physio is also important, of course, to mobilize them as part of nutrition as well. Because sarcopenia is a real thing in these patients, especially those who've got severe pancreatitis and been in ICU, even young people. And sarcopenia is very definitively associated with poor outcome and across a whole, or just about every kind of condition. Okay, so we're going to use enteral antibiotics. So before we go into that, enteral nutrition is best. Ideally, nasogastric, oral nasogastric, if you've got really big fluid collections, is causing kind of almost a gastric outlet obstruction, you may need to have an endoscopic nasojejunal, and some people even put a nasogastric and nasojejunal. The gastric is, or triluminal, so you're draining the stomach, but there's also another arm that
can drain the ileus and feed the patient at the same time. Yeah,
the single tube that one lumen stops in the stomach, so you're sucking stuff out because they're going to get gastroparesis and ileus, and then the other tube goes further down to feed into the small bowel if they haven't got an ileus.
And you're liaising with, exactly, you're liaising with your nutritional MDT, and they like to usually like a stepwise approach. Try oral, if that doesn't work, NG, if that doesn't work, NJ, and ultimately if that doesn't work, then TPA.
Antibiotics, let's go back to that. Antibiotics is controversial. We know that antibiotics, steroids, and all the other things that we tried for many years in pancreatitis does not work. And it's difficult sometimes to know if the patient has actually got an infective pancreatitis or not, because the difficulty is the parameters that you're relying on, i.e. CRP, white cell count, and even fever, well, they're going to be raised even if you've got a sterile pancreatitis. So it can be difficult. Certainly a CT scan that shows necrotic may swing you more towards antibiotic, but not completely, because you can have sterile necrosis. So it's very difficult, and you can say in this patient... but sometimes they'll make it a little bit easy for you for once, and they'll say they've got a really bad chest infection as well. Okay, great, antibiotics. That makes it easier. But if they haven't, you can argue that, in this patient, in most people with pancreatitis, there's no real role in it. But if it's an infected pancreatitis and I have a suspicion the patient's unwell, having liaise with one microbiology consultant, and because you are starting to talk about real heavy-hitting stuff, you know, meropenems and so on, to deal with particular possible infection. So yes, cautiously in particular scenarios, but not routinely.
So you've stabilized your patient. He's now been transferred under your care. You're seeing him again on day 14 from this admission. He's now starting to vomit everything that he drinks. He's not tolerating anything orally at all. It's coming as gastric content. It's not bile.
So day 14, I've not seen him for like 9 days. I do ward rounds, honestly. I don't know what you've heard. Okay.
You've taken up golf, and then between teas, you've decided
to
come
work,
and
do
a little bit of ward round. And this is what you find. So it's day 14. He's vomiting. He's distended. He's in a little bit. His pain's come back. He's not settling down. What do you do now?
Yeah. So now that's day 14, you'd hope that even that things were getting better and they had initially, but now you're getting to a point where you're thinking, could this be a kind of sequelae or complication of the pancreatitis? So you're thinking mainly about things about peripancreatic fluid collection. Now, the terms that you use here, especially if you're upper GI and HBB, is very important. Don't call it a pseudocyst yet, okay? Because what does it is a peripancreatic collection for at least 4 weeks, if not up to 6 weeks, some people argue, but at least 4 weeks. And then it becomes a pseudocyst. Okay, so again, the Atlanta classification. So I'm worried about a peripancreatic fluid collection that could be compressing the duodenum or the stomach or both, causing partial or complete gastric outlet obstruction. And to delineate whether that's the case or not, you would get another CT scan, get imaging.
So get a CT, and he's got peripancreatic collections that are compressing the duodenum. What do you do next?
Okay, so some of this is still within general surgery, but the more nuanced stuff will be kind of HPV and upper GI, which we'll talk about some other later points, especially the walled-off necrosis and all that stuff. For the purpose of general surgery, they just want you to be able to manage this patient on a ward. So patients got peripancreatic fluid collection with or without necrosis or whatever. If they've got fluid collection, you need to establish, one, you need to decompress the GI tract, and you need to establish feeding as well and manage their pain. Now, how you do that is there's multiple facets to it. One is, as we talked about, you could do an OGD or get a colleague to do an OGD and put a triluminal or if you're really cruel, two tubes, one in each nostril, one to suck out from the stomach, so a drainage one, and one to feed distally. There is also, but that of course does not do anything for the collection. It just establishes a route to feed or decompress and decompress the GI tract. To deal with the peripancreatic fluid, and we're going to keep it general surgical here, assuming you're not an upper GI or HPV surgeon, you're not going to talk about doing laparoscopic anything, open, certainly not open anything. You're not going to do anything. You're going to speak to HPB and upper GI, especially HPB, and that may be another unit. However, some of these may be after you sought advice. This may be amenable to radiological drainage. So you could try that. More fancier stuff and again, this is now going into your subspecialty area rather than general surgery, is the use of kind of transgastric axial stents. So it's a gastroscopy and you puncture a hole into the pseudocyst and deploy a stent, and you got to do it really quickly because the whole thing kind of collapses on you very rapidly. And gastroenterologists and some surgeons can do that and develops a tunnel. Essentially what's happening is the pseudocyst or the fluid collection drains into the stomach preferentially. But again, that is something for a subspecialty area different. But that's, just know that you want to establish feeding, decompress the GI tract, as well as all the other supportive care, pain control, antibiotics, fluid resuscitation, and maybe even go back to HDUI to you. And you want to establish feeding. You want to ideally, if it's possible, after discussing with your HPB center to drain, if radiologically, if it's amenable, or arrange for them to be transferred to have an axial stent to drain the pseudocyst.
Perfect. Yeah, agreed. It's generally advisable, really, in a complicated pancreatitis patient to take it up in an MDT, especially if you don't work in a tertiary center. Nutritional support, consider microbiology on standby if you start antibiotics. And close monitoring, either on the ward or in ICU.
Absolutely, and that's all you'll really need to do in your general surgical station. That will get you out of trouble, not just get you out of trouble, you'll score well. As we've talked about, but we'll do another video at a later date that will talk about the nitty-gritty for the upper GI and HPV trainees specifically, because there are some other things that you need to do, for example, follow-up care, chronic pancreatitis, kind of using Creon and pain control, even things like doing MRCPs and ERCPs, finding more rarer causes like an annular pancreas and kind of IgG4 kind of autoimmune. All those details you don't really need to worry too much about in your general surgical station. As well as things like, you know, upscaling of drains and the Panther trial and all the drainage trial and all that stuff. That's if there's a general surgical training and you're not up a GI NHV, you don't need to worry about it. If you are, we'll do another video. Okay, so the patient's then kind of had this treatment. You've managed them as per a general surgeon. Remember that you must establish a diagnosis if you can. Of course, idiopathic, i.e. we don't know what's going on. Pancreatitis does exist, but only after you've ruled things out. So you need to get an ultrasound scan. Even if somebody's got a long-standing history of alcohol, they haven't had an ultrasound scan in the last year or so, please don't assume it. You must say it. And sometimes you may even get an MRCP to get a clear picture. So even as a non-upper GI MHV trainee, he'll be expected to do that. So get imaging, try and establish a definitive diagnosis. Ask for help early if you're not a specialist and not in a specialist center. Get your MDT on board, dietitians, physiotherapists, ITU, anesthetists, intensivist, pain control team, anybody else that you need. ARDS, of course, we've talked about in other videos, are going to be critical because they do go into ARDS, unfortunately. And also remember control of glucose. You may need to have an endocrinologist. They can go into diabetes, insulin dependent after severe pancreatitis. So pancreatic function and so on is important. But that's all we really need to know. Alcohol as well. If somebody's coming with alcohol pancreatitis, remember what we said about higher level thinking and a holistic approach. You know, counselling for these patients, chlordiazepoxide epoxide and a regime. Yeah, Pabrenex and nutrition. Also, chlordiazepoxide epoxide withdrawal. So these are things that may seem really obvious and really, but you need to mention them because they demonstrate that higher level thinking that you're not just doing it as a trainee looking after a patient with pancreatitis. Yes. And that, I think, is it, unless you can think of anything else. By the way, gallstones, pancreatitis, you need to take your gallstone out as soon as the gallbladder out, with the gallstones as well, as soon as possible. You do not want to leave these patients on the end of the elective list waiting for 6 months or whatever.
ERCP as a bridge towards getting before, like, ERCP for pancreatitis and then getting their gallbladder out.
So, let's say if the scenario is patients have got deranged liver functions, and that's what they call pancreatitis, with raised amylase and lipase in the bounds of pancreatitis. And they've also got an obstructive LFTs, and you've done an ultrasound scan, dilated duct, but you can't see a stone. Okay, then I'll get an MRCP. MRCP shows a filling defect. Okay, you're going to need to get an ERCP. And they may ask you about the risks and complications of the ERCP, even as a general surgeon, as in a general surgical scenario. And yes, you get ERCP done and sphincterotomy, and then you go on to laparoscopic cholecystectomy. The nuances of should you go to a bile duct exploration, and then that's not something you want to discuss in general surgical station. That was it for pancreatitis. Remember, it's all about your general surgical principles, correcting the physiology, getting an established diagnosis, working with the team, get help.
Nutrition early,
pain control, and dealing with the underlying cause with intensive care, HDU support. And then arrange, once again, having that holistic, overall, higher-level thinking, arranging for them if they got recurrent chronic pancreatitis, being seen in a HPB unit, seeing gastroenterologists and endocrinologists. Thank you very much for listening and watching. And if you like the podcast and the channel, please do subscribe and tell your friends and write us a comment, any feedback. If you don't like what we're doing, send all your hate mail to Fahad. Fahad Iqbal is who you want.